Hey, I'm Dan Bova from Entrepreneur.com, and welcome to another episode of How Success Happens, the show where I get to talk to incredible people who do incredible things, or in the case of this week's guest, wonderful things. Kevin O'Leary, aka Mr. Wonderful, is one of the original Shark Tank sharks who for over a decade has been making the dreams of entrepreneurs come true, also sending a few of them home in tears. The 17th season premieres in about 2 weeks after this show comes out, so we'll see if we can get some spoilers. So Kevin is obviously an investor who is passionate about small businesses, but he is also quite passionate about collecting, specifically watches. And we're going to find out all about his latest watch venture, WonderCare, a partnership with the 1916 company. Welcome, Mr. Wonderful.
Great to be here. Thank you so much.
Yeah, great to talk to you. I've spoken now with Barbara and Damon, so I feel like I'm collecting this like Pokemon cards of very rich and successful people.
I think that's great. I'm sure Barbara got to you on a broomstick, so she's just wonderful. Okay. But and I've supported Damon ever since he got out of prison. Great guy.
They both had wonderful things to say about you as well, so that's great. So watches, you love watches. You really love them. I've seen videos where there's like tears coming out of your eyes as you're looking at these works of art. What are the rest of us missing who are walking around with like computers on our wrists?
Nobody needs a watch, but you think about it, they're mechanical. So you really don't need that. They're not nowhere near as accurate as your phone. You can just touch your phone and see what time it is. But watches do something else for people. They mark a moment in someone's life. So I don't buy watches just randomly. Something's happened to me that I want to mark. And every time I look at that dial, I'm going to remember exactly what it was. Whatever it is, that watch has a very significant meaning to me. And I love to support horology because think about the destiny of an artist, because watches are half science, half art. You have to start at the age of 14 years old, dedicate your entire life to crouching over a bench with a lube in your eye, making these tiny mechanical pieces of art, no different than a Fabergé egg. It takes a very special person to be able to do that, and very dedicated. Particularly, I'm a dial guy, so I'm always looking for what's the next dial. I have to be honest with you, I have so many watches now, but I know one thing for sure. Each dial is unique. I don't buy the same thing over and over again. So when I pair them up on my wrists, these are two Tudors I happen to be wearing this morning. This is actually carbon over here, a brand new piece they made. And this is ceramic. They're fantastic watches under the Rolex umbrella, obviously, but great value. These are $7,000 pieces that'll last a lifetime. So I don't really care what they cost. It's so they have unique dials. And that's kind of what got me into the whole thing. I started when I was a teenager. I've never stopped. I would say to people, it's a virus and you're never going to be cured from it.
All right. You've convinced me. I'm just imagining what I would have dedicated to my life if I had to make a decision when I was 14 years old. I don't know if it would have been a wise decision back then. So I usually start this show by asking people what success means to them personally. And I usually get very soulful answers about family and things like that. And I know that stuff is very important to you, too. But you're also a guy who collects $13 million rare basketball cards. So I'm looking for a little of that good rich guy porn, the stuff that success really brings you. Can you talk a little bit about being able to go for these pursuits that are out of the reach of a lot of people?
Yeah, you're speaking of the dual logo man, Jordan Kobe, that I recently was involved in buying. There's method to my madness. I'm always looking for a portion of my portfolio into alternative asset classes. And so I don't just jump into something like that on the whim of it. I did a lot of research first. Yeah. I first was approached into this space by the guys at Fanatics, Michael Rubin, and they told me about collectibles. And I thought it was a joke. I said, you guys are paying money for cardboard? That's ridiculous. But I started doing some research into it because they were spending billions of dollars on this asset class. So that's serious money.
Wow.
Okay. Buying licenses and getting involved with the card makers and everything else. And I discovered something really interesting. This asset class, these tiny cards about this big, are actually no different than modern or contemporary art. They have the same growth metrics as an asset class that if you bought a Warhol back in the 60s, you'd be pretty happy today. But you have to buy an original Warhol, the best Warhol. And if you go back and look at the same with a Pollock or any of these modern or contemporary artists, if you bought prints or lesser works, you didn't do very well. But if you bought a piece unique, as we call it in the watch business, a one of a kind, and that would be an original oil from a Pollock or a Warhol, those appreciated geometrically over time because they were unique. And collectors really started to go after them and sought them out. It turns out it's the same with sports cards. And so that Kobe that had dual logo man, Jordan Kobe, has a gold logo man right off his jersey in the card. It's the only one in the world.
Wow.
And that's the equivalent of buying an original Pollock. And so, yes, people are surprised with the 12.932. That's exactly what we paid
for. Okay, I rounded up. Sorry.
Yeah, no, it's okay. But believe me, that's a lot of money. I remember exactly how much it was. But I'll never sell that card. I'll never sell that card. And I'll tell you something else about this space that I learned. You don't go into this without an advisor. I don't need any help on watches, but I certainly am a newbie into collectibles on sports cards. And so I sought out the number one guy in the world. His name is Shine. Matt Allen is his actual name, but they know him in the hobby, as it's called, as Shine. And I called him up and I said, this is about 3 years ago. I said, Shine, tell me about this space. And we got to know each other a little bit. And I knew on this particular dual logo man, he wanted to buy it. I thought, why compete with the number one guy? Why not form a syndicate together, which we do in watchmaking too, when we buy unique pieces for millions of dollars. I said, Shine, let's partner up. And one of my other business partners, Paul Warshaw, the three of us formed a strategy, a syndicate for that auction night. We were up at 3 a.m. My wife came to visit me about 1:00, said, all three of you are crazy. You're out of your mind. And by then, the bidding was at $8 million. She was saying, what are you, nuts? This is a piece of cardboard. I've already heard this 10 times. We didn't win that card till 3:30 a.m. The world exploded when they figured out I was part of the buying group. And that's the story.
That's amazing. You know, it's such a great part of that story. People don't often, they feel, they don't want to ask for help because they think it'll make them look dumb. You asked for help, and you did it in a way that wasn't just, hey, help me, but you didn't just get information, you got a partnership from it. So what would you advise to people who are reluctant to reach out and ask for help when they don't know something?
I learned long ago as a lesson in entrepreneurship that you have weaknesses. Everybody has weaknesses. Nobody can do it on their own. You have to find the partner that fills in your gaps. In the case of the card, Shine's the guy. And I said, look, I don't have your knowledge. I haven't spent decades learning about every single card series and all the rest of that. But I know I want to be in the asset class because I definitely know how contemporary art, modern art works. I collect it with my wife. So for me, this was a really interesting journey, and I got a quick education from him. But it's important to know that we have a strategy. This is, even since that night, we've bought many other cards. We're building an index. So the other thing I learned in life is you want diversification. It's not all about one card. I'm pretty sure, this may sound aggressive, I'm pretty sure that we will build the world's largest collection of important pieces. Really high-end pieces. And that I've learned slowly but surely. Next time we talk, I'm pretty sure we'll own the world's largest collection of important pieces. And what's that going to be worth? A lot. And the other thing I'd add to it is I don't have to do this, but I've never had more fun than this asset class. The people that are in the hobby are crazy. They're crazy people. And it's, you look around you in a room, I guarantee you, you're going to find 4 or 5 out of 10 people are insane collectors. And they've been doing it since they were 7 years old.
All right. We'll definitely check back in with you and see how that's going. You just mentioned something that I wanted to ask you about. You have obviously been very successful in your life, but you just keep doing stuff. You've got this Wonder Care project going on, the card collecting. What motivates you to keep wanting to do stuff when you could very easily do nothing for the rest of your life and relax?
Amazon brings the UEFA Champions League.
Unbelievable!
With Tuesday's unmissable match.
Enchantingly wonderful!
World-class players.
Salah!
What a strike!
Incredible drama.
And Haaland!
History in the making.
Rice with take two!
The UEFA Champions League. It's on Prime.
Yeah. What I love is when people tell me, you can't do that. I love it. Wonder Care came out of a need, a pain point I had as a watch collector. Most people put their watches on their home policy, and the problem with that is many of those policies do not account for the appreciated value of watches. Watches don't go down. Sometimes they go way up in value, a Rolex or something else. And so I needed to create an insurance product that would reflect that, that would let me be specific to watch by watch what I wanted to insure it for, the market price or the purchase price, whatever. A lot of flexibility. And when I started asking around for the product, I just said, look, I can't find this product and I need it. So I asked around, nobody could find it, but everybody said, oh, you can't do this. Nobody can start an insurance company. It's the most regulated business in the world. And I thought to myself, watch this. And then I met up with Danny and I said, Danny, what do you think of this product? I know Danny very well from the F.P. Jorn, the collection he amassed. And he said, no one's ever done it, but we could use it. And boom, I formed a team. I found the right people. I just found a phenomenal CEO. And we're building the business up together out of solving a problem. Mm. And we're kicking ass and we're taking names. It's just nobody can do what we can do because I have a huge advantage. I've got 10 million people that are watch fanatics that follow me. So my customer acquisition cost for insurance policies is zero.
Right.
I just have to put a 15-second commercial on my own social media network and boom, people like me say, tell me more about this product. And we're the only watch insurance company that has figured out the technology to actually attach to the POS, the register in the store, in the watch boutique. So it's just like AppleCare. Would you like AppleCare? Click here. Would you like WonderCare? Click here. Policy comes out in 9 seconds using AI. That's what I'm talking about.
That's awesome. Wow. That's incredible. Sign me up. I think this Apple Watch and maybe a Casio are the most expensive watches I have. But I also wanted to ask you, well, you mentioned shooting 6 shows a day. That sounds tiring. Do you have a preferred method of keeping yourself energized throughout the day? That's a big issue for a lot of people. We get tired. We have so much we want to do and we're exhausted. How do you stay energized?
That's a great question, a really good one, because I learned this. You should start this protocol. I'm going to give you a simple little recipe for success in maintaining energy and keeping sharp if you're an entrepreneur and staying focused. You know, the one that I never guessed, and I wish I'd learned this a lot earlier, is you can't eat crap food. And you have to think about what you're eating because that is what gives you your energy in the first place.
All
the
right,
other thing is I sleep 7 hours and 20 minutes. I wear an Oura ring to make sure. And the last thing, which there's two things, and you got to do these, but they just make sense. You got to get a little exercise every day. You got to move. And that may be just walking 10,000 steps or as I do in Miami, ride my bike for an hour and 20 minutes on the boardwalk. That's absolutely crucial. And I think if you think about this, in the context of just staying sharp, there's one last thing, and this is tricky because I love wine. A lot of people stop drinking. That's not me. I love wine. I don't drink anything else. I drink wine and really, really high-end tequila. But I stop drinking, or I try to, 3 hours before I go to bed because if you got to get the alcohol out of your blood to get a really good night's sleep, to get the REM sleep.
Yeah.
Another thing I would say to people, this I learned a little later in life. The muscle that's the most important in your body is your brain. You got to keep using it. And so you have to spend about 30% of your day outside of your comfort zone, doing something that you are nervous about, you've never done before, or you're learning, or you don't think you're good at. Could be playing a violin, could be taking up photography, could be taking up painting, play guitar. I recently got a call about a year ago from a producer of a movie called Marty Supreme, director of Josh Safdie and Ronnie Bronstein wrote it. These guys did Uncut Gems with Adam Sandler, and they said, look, we've got a part in a movie for you, and we're looking for a real asshole, and you're it. And I said, wow, I've never done scripted. I don't know what it's like to learn 7 pages of script. How do I do that? And they said, don't worry about it. You're going to be across from Timothy Chalamet and Gwyneth Paltrow. They're really good. They'll help you. And I thought to myself, that's outside my comfort zone. That movie's coming out Christmas Day. Don't miss it. I'll let you be the judge of my performance.
How did you nail the asshole of it all? Did you think you got it?
It was set in 1952. And I learned that I can be just as big an asshole in 52 as 2025. And so it was really a wonderful experience. A couple of tips for people if you're going to think about scripting. You have to learn everybody's lines, not just your own. You have to immerse yourself into the moment.
Yeah, that's awesome. What did you learn from Timothy Chalamet or Gwyneth Paltrow? Any specific tips they gave you or just things you observed them doing that you used for your own benefit?
It was really about learning their lines at the same time. I screwed up at the beginning thinking that I didn't have to know what they were going to say. But what happens in a scene, remember you shoot these 20, 30, 40 times, these takes.
Yeah.
You get into a cadence, you pick up on what they say and you know that's the magic. You find that moment because what the directors do and the editors is they find the unique moments across 20 or 30 takes. And the only way you're going to find, you know it when it hits. You feel it. Bang, I nailed it.
Yeah.
And they nailed it. And together you look at each other and say, nailed it.
Yeah.
And then the director says, do it again. It's amazing.
That's awesome. Well, speaking of directors, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about leadership. There's been something trending in the news. They're calling it quiet firing. Where in this kind of remote life that we're living, rather than just outright firing someone, managers tend to just sideline people and hope that they'll get the hint and go on their own. What do you think about that, quiet firing? Have you ever quiet fired somebody?
Never. That's complete bullshit. I hate that. That's just the wrong thing to do. If you're going to fire somebody, fire them. Tell them why you're firing them. Give them a good severance and help them on their journey. You owe them that. When I build an organization and I know let's go back a little bit because I think you're bringing up a very important point about building businesses, building entrepreneurship, building a startup. The best way to do it, as I've learned, because I've done this countless times, is when you think you've found somebody, you've done a search and you've interviewed them a zillion times and you're feeling good about the hire, don't hire them. Bring them in at a higher base as a consultant and an advisor on a contract for 6 months and say, the reason I'm doing this is you don't know me and I don't know you. I feel good about you. You feel good about me. I want you to work with the team. Anytime during this 6 months, if you feel that you're ready to come in full time and I feel the same, we can just change it in a second. You'll get your options and all the rest of that stuff. But let's feel each other out a little bit and pay them 30% more than the base you even talked about in looking for them. So it's really worth it for them economically. And that way, when it doesn't work out, and it doesn't work out sometimes as much as 30, 40% of the time, you're not breaking someone's heart. They don't have a blotch on their resume. They just acted as a consultant for you for a while, which it's just 4 months. It looks normal. I don't want to hurt their prospects. There's none of this BS firing, because if it doesn't work out with somebody 4 or 5 years later, after they become an employee, you sit down with them and say, look, I'm going to give you 3 shots. I'm going to set goals for you. As you mentioned, we're working remotely a lot, so it's project-based work for a lot of people. You set a goal, you got to achieve it. You haven't achieved 2 goals in a row. If you miss a third, let's part ways, because obviously you're not happy. Or if you want to part ways now, I'm good with that too. But you'd be surprised how often that happens.
Yeah.
But I got to keep the ship moving. I got to keep it going. But if you screw up, you're out of there. Mm. I don't want you to screw up anybody else's potential to make money, because you don't work for me just because you love me. You work for me because I'm trying to help you achieve financial freedom. It's not about the greed of money. Entrepreneurship is the pursuit of financial freedom. You will never succeed if all you're doing is thinking about money. You will fail. You have to have passion. You have to want to get up in the morning and do what you do. I love what I do. I get up very early and I love to compete. And the derivative of that is I make money, but that's not why I do it. But it does give me the freedom to pursue any passion I like a $12.932 million card. I know it's a good place to go back to. I couldn't buy that unless I had been successful as an entrepreneur.
Yeah, that's great. I love it. Fantastic advice. Kevin, we got some questions sent in from readers and anyone listening right now. If you want to send in questions, be sure to follow Entrepreneur on social media and we'll be telling you who's coming up and you can send in your questions. So this first one comes from Chris Valentino. He says, hi, Kevin. You're known for being ruthless about margins. What's your advice for service-based entrepreneurs dealing with clients who constantly want more for less?
Great question. Really important question. And I deal with this all the time. Here's how you solve this problem. You make sure your customer support is in the top quartile all the time, and you won't have to give on margins. And I'll tell you why. Customers covet one thing more than anything, service and support. And so what happens very often is people lose margins because their service and support is crap. And the client comes back and says, you didn't call me back for 2 days. My HVAC system is broken. It's 95 degrees in my house. And I want a discount when you repair this thing. I'm so pissed off at you. And you probably have to give them one because you screwed up. But if the minute they call you, you fix it that same day. So by dinner time, they're in a cool room. And I'm just using air conditioning as an example.
Yep.
And you send them an invoice and you're charging them whatever it is an hour, $250, $500, I don't know. They're not going to quibble about the bill. They got what they wanted and they're very appreciative that you're taking care of them that way. And they're not asking for a discount. And I'm going to give you an example to understand this concept of being in the top quartile of service. And I use this analogy all the time. It's great for entrepreneurs to understand this. You want to buy a computer. You can buy a $600 Windows machine from many, many different brands that runs the same software that a $3,000 Mac laptop runs. Mm-hmm. Why do you pay $3,000 for what you could have bought for $600? Because you want to be in the Apple ecosphere. You want to be part of what Apple does so well, customer service support and Apple. You pay a crazy amount of money. And the reason I know this is I worked for Steve Jobs way back in the early 90s. Not a nice guy, but he taught me so much. He said, I don't need to do market research. They don't know what they want till I tell them what they want. I said, Steve, you sound like such an asshole. But he was right. He said they want great product with fantastic service. Fantastic service. So if we have to spend billions of dollars on customer service, we're going to do that. And we're going to charge a commensurate price for our product. When you get hooked on Apple, whether it's their phone or their laptop or their desktop, you don't go back. You want to run your business the same way. You want to take care of your customers. You want to focus on that relationship that you have with them, that direct relationship you're building. This is the key to success in entrepreneurship today, because so much of what we do is online, which is direct to customer. They need to trust you. They need to know you're transparent with them. And when things screw up, you immediately take care of it and you invest in customer service. That's the answer to that question. He will not have to discount or lose margin when he is number one on service and support for the customer.
That's great. Wow, great advice. I hope you're listening, Chris. Great advice there from Mr. Wonderful. Let's do one more. This is from Salmon. Big fan of yours. I'll cut to the question. What are the financial mistakes that you see new entrepreneurs making over and over again?
They believe their own forecasts. It's the number one mistake. The road to success in entrepreneurship is a journey. It's not a destination. Poo-poo happens all the time. Stuff you never saw coming at you, boom, it hits you. You need to be flexible. You need to read the room. You need to differentiate the difference between what is noise in your day and what is signal. These are very important concepts. And above all, don't make the assumption of success every day. Things will go wrong. They assume they're going to hit that $2 million a month target next month or whatever it is. They just assume. What happens if you're wrong? What happens if you're spending too much on inventory? What happens if your cash flows are not what you think? What happens if that big sale doesn't happen? What happens if your accountant or, you know, who's ever running marketing or sales quits on you? All of these things will happen to you. What's the plan? What are you going to do when that happens? Because that's what makes an entrepreneur, the ability to pivot, to understand that these pitfalls, these valleys are going to happen to you and you're not going to blame someone else. I never invest in an entrepreneur ever that's had a failure. And I don't mind investing in entrepreneurs. I say, what did you do for the last 2 years? They say, I started a company and it failed and I'm starting a new one now and I'd like you to invest in it. And I ask them a very simple question. Why did it fail? And when they start telling me it was someone else's fault or the market changed or an employee quit, I never invest in them. They're a loser. When you fail, it's your fault. You screwed up. Own it and learn from it and don't do it again. Then you get me to invest in you. But don't tell me that it's someone else's fault. It's 110% your fault. You're the screw up. That's how it is 100% of the time. That's very good advice when you're talking to investors. Don't blame someone else when you know damn well it's you.
Wow. Preach. That was great. Wow. Great answer. Thanks for the question, Salmon. All right, Kevin, we're going to move into the speed round of this show. You ready for it?
I'm ready.
Okay, so what is a habit that you are grateful to have and one you wish you could ditch?
Drinking wine.
Okay.
I would like to stop completely. It ain't going to happen.
Is there one that you're happy to have?
I'm happy to be drinking wine. I love wine. I make wine. I sell 6 million bottles a year in O'Leary Fine Wines. I love it.
Okay, I'll drink to that. That's awesome. So we've talked a lot about things you love, specifically watches. What's something that a lot of people love, but you can't stand?
Shit food. There's so many people eating so much shit food, full of salt, full of sugar, full of crap, full of additives. You don't know how bad that is for you until you stop eating it, and then you feel incredible.
Yeah. All right. Stop eating shit. And then finally, speaking of food, the sharks are out for dinner and the check comes. Who grabs it and who reaches for their wallet in slow motion?
That's been an ongoing sport for 17 years. And I'll tell you, I've paid for plenty of dinners. Now, what happens so that everybody knows? We work until sometimes 9:30. We get up at 3 in the morning. We work till 9:30 at night, but we're hungry. We want to have a bite to eat. Usually it's fish or something at 10:30. So we call a restaurant in LA and I say to all my fellow sharks, who's up for dinner? And it's every night is different. Sometimes we have guest sharks. We all cruise over there. They keep up a table for us. And if you got it, it all works out in the long run. I feel over 17 years, we all contributed, but it's a wonderful experience to just to know these people like their family, because they are. We certainly don't have to agree on everything, but we've worked together for so long.
Yeah.
Barbara never has to say anything again because I've heard every single word she knows, everything. So if she just sits there, that's good. There's no new information I need from her.
That's fantastic. All right. Well, Kevin, this is so great. Such great information. So great feeding on your passion for watches. And I'm sure people can translate that passion to whatever is meaningful to them in their life. What is the best way for people who want more Mr. Wonderful in their life to keep up with you?
Just follow me on social. It's Kevin O'Leary TV on pretty well all the platforms. And I just share my experiences. I want to share what I'm doing and things that I'm passionate about. I really enjoy the experience. And I'm just brutally honest. And I think that's the only way to be. My mother taught me something decades ago. She said, if you always tell the truth, you'll never have to remember what you said. And that's how I operate. Not everybody likes it. I don't care. It's just the way it is.
Fantastic. All right, man. Again, thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it. We love you here at Entrepreneur. So hopefully we could do lots of more stuff together. And good luck with your keynote today, now that you need it.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Take care.
All right. Have a great one. Hey, what's the biggest hurdle that you feel like is getting in the way of your success? Let me know at howsuccesshappens@entrepreneur.com, and I will ask our next guest.